And as I said here at the beginning of the program, we're happy to have in the studio once again Michael Ward. He's here, been with us here on the program before to talk about birds, and it's always a lot of, it's one of the fun things that we can do. It's not about some tragedy happening somewhere, but it's about the beauty of nature and things that you can do to bring it into your yard. So thanks very much again.
Thanks for having me. That's great to be here.
Is there anything in particular that's really new you just might like to talk about? Something that you're working on, maybe?
Well, we always have a lot of stuff going on. We were just, for local things, we were just out with the freshmen here in the NRES. They're just on campus. Took them out to Hourton. You know, a lot of the kids come here to campus and don't realize our natural areas. And so we're out at Hourton on Saturday. It was a beautiful day. And there was lots of birds migrating through. And so this is the time, like you mentioned before, to go out and to really see. I mean, we had the opportunity now to see birds that come through for just a couple of weeks on their way from Canada to South America. And we're really lucky in the last few days to have the weather perfect. We have some fronts coming through, but sometimes these fronts actually speed up the birds going through. Other times they kind of slow them down. And right now we're kind of in a lull where there's lots of birds around. Some of the summer birds are gone, but we have a lot of the juncos, the winter birds showing up. And so it's a really great time to get out. The leaves are falling off the trees, which makes it easier to see the birds. And so it all works really well. Waterfowl are coming down. It's going to be a really remarkable year for waterfowl, according to the people that survey these. And so if you get the opportunity to go out right now in the River Valley over in western Illinois, there's hundreds of thousands of waterfowl, and so it's really the time of year to get out.
So what are the factors contributing to it being a good year to see waterfowl?
So all the flooding in the Dakotas earlier this year, it was, you know, tragic for Minot and a lot of the other these towns, but it creates great habitat for ducks. And so the prairie potholes, the more habitat they have, the more they can reproduce, also kind of disperses the predators. So one of the main reasons they have bad years and good years is habitat and predators. And so when you have lots of rain, lots of habitat, the predators can't cover the whole area. You get huge numbers. So this year they have record numbers of birds like shovelers, redheads, blueing teal. And I just heard a couple of days ago that over by Havana, Illinois, so a couple of hours from here, there's a relatively new nature conservancy site called Amaquan, and there was 21,000 pintails and 10,000 blueing teal. So there's a huge concentration. So, you know, stuff you see on National Geographic that you can see here in Illinois by just, you know, taking a little trip over to the river. So.
Yeah, that's really astonishing that you'd be able to see that many birds in one place at one time.
And it's great. You know, it just shows how we're doing a good job in Illinois. So there's been a lot of effort along the Illinois River Valley to restore habitat. And, you know, this is what it ends up being, is where we have these areas that they can support. I mean, just have enough food to support that many ducks. I mean, they're eating all the time. They're getting fat because they want to keep on going south. Just really is a tribute to the conservation efforts we're doing in Illinois. Mm.
Well, here's a caller over in Belgium. Let's talk with him. Line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello, and I heartily agree. Habitat is more important than almost anything you can do for wildfowl. Wildlife of every sort. But I wanted to bring up something that I think we need to really worry more about here, at least in East Central Illinois, and I think other places in the United States, they have solved the problem. If you happen to go out at rainy times, you'll notice that telephone poles will get a little zip, 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 zip. What that is the pole is wet and it's grounding one of their wires to the earth and it's making electric contacts. Why that's important is because we have a lot of hawks that like to land on the tops of these poles. And if they happen to touch a wet pole and one of their lines, there's a dead hawk just instantaneously. There's no learning curve to that at all. And I've been seeing more and more of them around. I think some places have solved it by putting perches on top of the poles in some places. Because as we all know, hawks just love to perch in a spot and wait until they see something to eat, and they'll swoop down on it. And in the eastern part of Illinois, you know, we can be in spots where there's no trees around, and it's a very, very attractive spot to go to is a telephone pole. And I was wondering if you could say anything about that.
Sure. So there's a couple things here. One is, you're definitely correct that, you know, we do see several raptors every year, at least here on campus, that get electrocuted. Usually it ends up being young birds, birds that just aren't experienced, or some migratory birds. So, I mean, I would concur that maybe as we put up new telephone poles, having kind of a taller top of it, essentially get a little bit away from the power lines is probably a good thing. Right now I know that power companies try to have the lines far enough apart so they can't – obviously if you touch two lines at the same time, you're going to get electrocuted as well. And so they try to do that. But there is there's lots of benefits to perches, but also there's negatives. So I just worked on some helped on some research down in Florida where they're looking at having perches for a bird called snail kite to help them actually eat snails that they eat. And so which turned out to be very important. But the trade-off is that when you do that, it also attracts owls and other, you know, sometimes the predators aren't what we want. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. So I would agree that, you know, having some of these perches is good, but in certain areas we're actually trying to get away, not even having power lines, but try to get away from having these perches because it actually promotes, especially great horned owls, that can be really bad. Great horned owls are the number one predator for peregrine falcons. So we're trying to get these falcons back in Illinois, and we're putting these perches up thinking it's going to be good for the falcons, and it turns out the owls are using them. So I think it's definitely an issue. It's just something you got to, you know, decide what your goals are for a certain area and move accordingly.
I didn't realize that owls caused that big of a problem.
Yeah, great horns are a big problem. They pick off most of the young peregrines. The number one predator is great horned owls. And we had a big issue with them. We do research up in Chicago with terns and with herons. And the number one problem we have is these great horned owls sneaking in the middle of the night and just eating everything. So they're a real problem that we got to deal with.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You can send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Our guest is Mike Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the U of I, also a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey. He's an avian ecologist and occasionally is on the program, and we talk about birds. So questions are welcome. Maybe is there something you've seen you have a question about, or other questions about maybe good places to go to see birds? Any and all, that is certainly welcome.
Yeah, so there's lots of good areas around here. So here on campus, we take students out to a lot of different places. And right now, Busey Woods here in Champaign and some over in Vermilion County, there's some Forest Glen, Heron Pond. Those sites right now are just perfect. As a lot of birds move through, still a lot of the birds that bred here haven't left. There's still a lot of interesting birds around. Just yesterday, I got a call from Vermilion County Conservation District about a red-tailed hawk over in their sites. And we have a red-tailed hawk here on campus that have these tags in their wings. Maybe some of them have seen them. And these red-tailed hawks are birds that are caught on O'Hare airports. And when they catch hawks there, they obviously want to remove them so they don't get sucked up into the engine and cause catastrophes. And usually when they catch them, they move them somewhere else and put tags in their wings so they know if they come back. Well, the last few weeks, they've been showing up here around Illinois. And so what it kind of tells me is that these hawks are moving very long distances. And so if you go to important areas, red-tailed hawks will eat squirrels and stuff, and so they'll come to cities. But other ones they're moving all throughout Illinois. And so if you go to a really high-quality site, you have the opportunity to see a lot of neat birds this time of year as they move through Illinois.
So it wasn't the hawks decided to move. It was somebody
Well, they were helped
them.
Initially. But I believe they're all pretty much moved to a Rockford area. And then once they're in the Rockford area, they move from there. The one on campus is actually interesting because it obviously has been in cities before because it's very tame. You can walk right up to it as it's on a pole, and it's looking for squirrels. So usually, in a lot of raptors, they kind of grow up learning how to feed on certain things. And so this one, it looks like pretty much a squirrel specialist. I saw it catch a squirrel a couple of days ago down on Green Street, and they typically, learn how to sneak up on them and get them. And, squirrels are pretty easy pickings around here. So.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of them. That is true. And I suppose that they're used to being around people. So maybe they wouldn't be as shy as they maybe it should be for their own good.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that this question of how it is that animals decide what it is that is food.
Yeah.
And how much of that maybe just has to do with what they're exposed to or what they're experiencing.
Well, there's a lot of learning that goes on in birds, more than we probably give them credit for. I mean, there's great examples with crows, and crows are amazingly intelligent animals that, you can teach them to talk, you can teach them to identify different people. There was a great study showing that crows can identify people and learn who they like and who they dislike. There was a study that was done in the University of Washington where they gave undergrads a Dick Cheney mask, just I don't know if there was some political motivation for that, but a Dick Cheney mask and had him walk across the quad and shoot at crows with a little BB gun, airsoft gun kind of thing. And then they had different people come, different undergrads months later, put on the mask, ask them to walk across the quad. And as they did that, they were mobbed by the crows because they remember that in that case, Dick Cheney wasn't good for them. They did the same thing with sports athletes down in Florida. And so it shows that crows are able to identify individual people and kind of learn whether they're good or bad. And so that with hawks in town or squirrels in town, they start habituating to what's going on. I mean, this And this can be actually expanded to more broader issues like wind power. So a lot of people are concerned about wind power here in central Illinois. And, you know, birds born and raised kind of in areas where wind power is an issue hopefully will habituate to this, and maybe they won't actually get caught in the blades and kind of stay away from it. We're doing research right now on wind power to try to look at the impact. And it can be tricky because it might be that birds don't actually die from running into blades, but they just don't want – it just bothers them. The flicker bothers them or something else. And so by understanding the behavior of birds, we can have a better understanding of how to conserve them and what actually is going to be very detrimental to the birds and what may not be too bad for them.
Yeah. I came across an article that I thought was interesting or unusual. At least this is something I'd never read before. And it happened to be from a newspaper from India where they were writing about concerns of cell phone towers and it possibly the radiation coming off cell phone towers potentially being problematic for birds. And in this particular case, there seemed to be some concern that it was having an effect on sparrows. I don't know that it would necessarily affect one species over another. But this is the first time I think I'd read anything about concerns of cell phone towers and birds. Is this something you know about?
I haven't heard about that. I mean, there's been studies on that, but most of the time they don't find an effect that they don't find an effect of radiation. And second, that most cell phone towers, the reason why towers are bad for birds is because they have a light on the top. And the light on the top actually attracts birds as they're migrating because they use celestial cues. So the reason why, like we were out at Hourton a couple days ago with the students, these birds that are flying south, they get up at night, they're looking at the stars, they're looking at where the sun goes down, and it tells them where to go. So as they start migrating, all of a sudden there's a big bright light in front of them, they get disoriented and they start circling these towers. And the guide wires are actually what kills most of the birds that hold these towers up. And since cell phone towers typically don't have guide wires, they probably don't kill too many things. And which is a good thing because cell phone towers are becoming almost ubiquitous, especially the big concern is down in Central and South America where, you know, cell phone towers are the primary way of communicating these days. And there's all kinds of cell phone towers all over the place. And there's a lot of areas that are pinch points where all the birds kind of funnel through. And if these were a problem, it could really be detrimental, especially hawks and some of the other passerines.
Well, do they take into consideration where they decide where to put the cell phone towers?
Usually not. You know, we try to provide some guidance in Illinois for the wind power just because there's definitely some issues. We know, like waterfowl on the river, like to migrate along the river, and so we want to keep the wind power out of there. But for cell phone towers, we usually don't have a lot of input into where those end up being. If they use federal money, it has to go through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and a lot of times wind power is getting, you know, some federal money to do this, and so we get to input in that. But the cell phone towers, if they're not using federal money, they can kind of put them where they want.
It seems that certainly the flyways ought to be real well established to people know what they are and know what these main – and there's, you know, a big one on each coast and there's a big one down the Mississippi River where forever probably there have been large numbers of birds going back and forth.
Yeah, but people draw these lines on maps and they think the birds are going north and south. And so we do a lot of research here on campus where we put these transmitters on birds and track them as they migrate. So right now, just as I was coming here, we're tracking birds across the Gulf of Mexico. So we put transmitters on birds in Alabama. We pick them up when they get to the Yucatan Peninsula and there's a hurricane coming. So it's not going to be good for anybody involved, the birds or my equipment. But the thing we learned from it is these birds don't go directly south. They're going all kinds of crazy directions. They'll take off, even around here, they'll take off and think they're going to go north, and all of a sudden they'll head west most of the night. And so because of that, it means that this is a lot more complex than we think. And also wind can blow these things around. And so we need to think about where to put wind power, essentially. You know, a lot of times here in Champaign, when the birds take off, we can actually track them as they go through wind farms and see if there's actually impact. And so far, you know, all the birds kind of go over the top because they migrate so high that most of the time wind power isn't the big issue.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of focus is Mike Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, and he's a scientist who specializes in studying birds and has been on the program with us quite a few times to have this kind of conversation, talk about birds, some of the research that he's involved in, answer questions, and whatever bird-related questions you have, this is the opportunity to do it. You can give us a call. This is one of the things that we do that's just kind of for fun, although it is sometimes we do get into some serious environmental issues. On the program, we talk about all kinds of things, politics, social issues, science, history, the arts, and we do have a lot of shows that are how-tos where we try to help people with some particular problem. So all of this is built to be, we hope, a useful show for you so that sometimes you can come away with some practical information or sometimes with some new thing that you have learned. And it's all here, really, it's all here because people like you support it. And you know, I've been doing the show for a long time now. We've been on the air 30 years. And one of the things for me that's so great about it is I get to have these long, leisurely conversations with people, and I don't have to stop. I don't have to stop for commercials or for anything else. That's a great thing. It's a very rare thing, but it's something that happens in public broadcasting, to have these kinds of extended interviews. That's really the only place that you're going to find a show like this. So what we're asking you to do is to be more than just a listener. We're asking you to be a supporter of the station as well. Now, we've set some goals here. We're hoping that this month we'll raise $210,000. And to do that, we are hoping that just in this fundraising period that we can hear from 1,200 people. And we're coming down to the wire here now. We will finish up tomorrow morning at 10. So this will be the last opportunity that I'll have during Focus during this fall drive to ask for your support. Your pledge right now, believe me, it does make a difference. Everyone, no matter what the amount, really makes a difference. So this would be a great time to call. Or you can go online. You can continue to listen to us, and you can go online and pledge at the same time. So you won't even have to get yourself away from the conversation. Either way, it's quick and it's easy, and it's real important to us. And it's important to you, too, because what it means is that you're supporting programs that you use. 217-244-9455. That's the number to call. You can also go online, willpledge.org. And I don't want to confuse you, but let me give you a number, another number, because it's the number to call for the show. Here, if you have questions, you can call 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. You can also send us a question by email if you want. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, in addition to the, you know, I mentioned that I just happened to come across the story about cell phones and whether or not that's the problem for birds. I did also see the story, and this I thought also was pretty interesting, and it's more certain. And this, it was a story that was in the New York Times, so it's a New York story, but I'm sure that it's a big city story as well. And it's the fact that maybe in a place like New York, the greatest threat to birds are buildings, particularly glass buildings, depending on how they're designed, because birds fly into them. And tremendous numbers of birds apparently are killed because they fly into buildings, because they don't understand that's what it is. Yeah. That it's a solid surface thing.
No, that's a significant source of mortality for birds. Is they, there's two things going on with buildings. One is the light issue again. So they see the light, they fly toward it, they fly into buildings. And so there's a big effort here in Illinois. Chicago is doing a great job where they have the Lights Off program, where they promote, especially down in the heart of the city, turning off lights at night that you don't need. Because a good example is McCormick Place. So years ago, they used to leave the lights on at McCormick Place all night to make it, look nice, I guess, as you drive down Lakeshore Drive. But literally, they go out with a wheelbarrow every morning and pick up the dead birds that would fly into the building.
Yeah.
And so once they turned it off, they get one or two now. And it was just, night and day. And it really is a credit to, Mayor Daley, when he was the mayor of Chicago, really had a very active Department of Environment that worked with the different buildings to turn off these lights, and so they wouldn't fly into it. The second issue is an issue that we all face, where if you have a window, sliding glass door, that kind of stuff, and you want to feed birds in your backyard, if you kind of arrange it in a certain way, birds are flying, they don't see that there's glass there, they notice it's glass, but they can't stop, and they run into it. And so that's another significant source of mortality. There is ways that you can try to deal with that by making sure if the birds, if you look at it and you can see through your sliding glass door and through a window out to the other side, and there's a tree, when the bird's coming, they're going to see the same thing. And so try to make it so they can't see through that area. In Chicago, one of the big problems we have is, so if the bird doesn't run into a tower at night, then the sun comes up and it's got to find a place to go. So they all go down to the city, Well, there's no green area, so they fly into people's, you know, most of these buildings have a lot of nice indoor plants right inside the doors. So they're hitting the windows trying to get to the indoor plants because it's the only thing that's green down, you know, along Lake Shore or Michigan Avenue in those areas. And so, but there is definitely some big efforts in Chicago, Toronto, New York City, because people are realizing this. And, you know, if someone's walking to work and there's a dead warbler on the ground, you know, people just naturally feel bad. And so there's some pretty simple things we can do, creating these little parks. Again, you know, Chicago's done a great job with – you can create a little park, but not all parks the same. You don't want to mow all the grass. You want to have some shrubs. And there's ways you can actually create some habitat, just like in your backyard, where if you want to have birds, there's definitely there's things you can do to promote having the birds. And, right, you know, this is a good time of year. Right now, white-throated sparrows are coming in. There's, you know, if you have some good dense shrubs in your backyard, you're going to have a lot of these birds coming through. And so there's the opportunity to really make your yard – bird-friendly.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I'm sure we've talked about before that you can do that's really easy is to provide a water source, and that's particularly a big thing in the winter time that maybe we don't think about that, but it is possible to have an arrangement so that there's water and it doesn't freeze, and that can really be a big attractant to birds.
Yeah. I mean, water's both important for drinking but also for cleaning off. So as while the water freezes up, a lot of birds use water to kind of clean up their feathers. And so it's good to have that in your backyard. Another thing you can provide is obviously hummingbird food, nectar. Right this time of year, it's kind of getting past the peak of hummingbirds. It's kind of funny because we're actually putting transmitters, really bitty little transmitters, on hummingbirds right now in Alabama, and we track them to see as they go across the Gulf of Mexico. So this whole wives' tale about they're landing on the back of geese and geese are taking them across, it's not true. they're all flying across. So it's funny because some of the first data we got because we're worried, these are little birds. You know, they weigh a couple pennies, weight of a penny. And so these transmitters are very, very small. And so we're just worried that, you know, we put this on a bird and they're going to fly out and they're going to become fish food. So the first bird we actually put on went out for a little ways, then turned around, came back, went out again. And so he's kind of chickening out as he went across. But so I wondered if it was the weight. But since then, we've had birds that decided to go across. We also have birds that go out and decide, you know, the wind. These are little bitty things. And think about this hurricane coming across. If a hummingbird's leaving today from Alabama, its chances of making it are pretty slim as this hurricane's coming up through over by Cancun. So some of these birds chicken out and come back to shore, and you can see they're just going along the coast. They're going down to Florida and kind of hop across on the islands to Cuba and go across. But we're doing this research again, and so a couple weeks ago we're getting lots of hummingbirds, and all of a sudden we have none. And then the last couple of days we've got some more. And so I'm not sure this is correct or not, but it could be that some of these hummingbirds got stuck in people's backyards. And so they had a good hummingbird feeder. They got fattened up, and it kind of took them a little longer to get down to Alabama than it would, you know, naturally. But it's good because they need to almost double their weight in order to get the fat they need to actually make it across the Gulf.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to study, you know, the young birds are the ones interesting because they've never done it before. So you would think those are the ones to be kind of chicken. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, what the different behaviors they have.
Well, this is something that if I suppose if you didn't have the transmitters, you wouldn't really know how many birds, how many birds start out and turn on and say, no, I'm not so sure, and go back and forth, or how many birds actually make it, how many birds, because aren't there some that actually maybe they're wherever they are, they're thinking, hey, it's not so bad here. Maybe I'll just stay here.
Well, yeah, hummingbirds are doing that right now because there's a lot of people that come down to New Orleans area and places in Texas for the winter, and they are used to feeding birds, hummingbirds. And so now they're just taking their you know, trailer down there and putting out a hummingbird feeder, and this bird realizes, you know, why should I just risk my life traveling another few thousand kilometers while I can hang out in the backyard of this person in New Orleans and eat, you know, nectar all winter? Of course, it's a trade-off because it gets cold down in New Orleans, and so they got to keep their – and if they're relying on someone to remember to put out hummingbird feed for them, it becomes even more precarious. And so – but that's one of the interesting things that we study is these trade-offs. So even here in Champaign or in central Illinois, the trade-off of certain birds to say, I'm going to try to make it through this winter. You know, some of us – you guys have read probably in the papers, this winter's supposed to be bad. A lot of snow, really cold. Obviously, birds don't probably know this, and so they. But they have these waterfowl coming down. Why don't we going to stay around here? And it might be a bad decision. Of course, if it doesn't get cold enough, then they're better off in the spring to get back to the breeding sites first. And typically, the first males to get back get the most females, that kind of stuff. And so there's a benefit to making it through the winter if you can make it. So. Mm-hmm.
We're talking this morning in this part of the show with Michael Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. We're talking about birds. That's his area of interest. And we'd be happy to have questions. And, of course, we'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics for you every week. Tomorrow, just mentioned that in the first hour, I'll talk with Isabel Wilkerson. She's a professor of journalism at Boston University. She's the author of the book The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration, and that is the migration of African Americans from south to the north. It's a book that got a lot of positive attention. It's now out in paperback, and she'll talk with us about the book on the program tomorrow. Also, then in the second hour, Janice Harrington will be the guest. She's an award-winning poet. She's a storyteller. She is a librarian, creative writing teacher in the Department of English at the U of I. And Celeste Quinn will be talking with her about a collection of poetry that she's published based on her experiences in a nursing home. The Hands of Strangers is what it's called. So that's tomorrow. Some talk about poetry in the second hour. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. We always welcome questions and calls. And we've tried to build into the show lots of variety. That's just a couple of examples. And if you go to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu, you can look at the schedule and see what we'll be doing over the days ahead. And it's a pretty wide range of stuff, lots of different subjects. And, you know, that's one of the things that over the years people have said that they really appreciate, that there is a lot of variety. And I've even talked to people who have said, you know, I heard what you were going to talk about, and I wasn't really so sure that I was interested. But I started listening, and I listened all the way through to the show. So if it's something that grabs you, well, that's great. Well, now what we want to do is grab you and drag you over to the telephone or to your computer to make a pledge. That's what we're here to do. Besides having some fun talking with Mike about birds, we want to encourage people to support the station. So you can do that by calling. You can go online. Jeff Bossert's here with me to encourage people to do that.
You know, and at times when perhaps I shouldn't be admitting this, but during a slower news day, I'll think, well, David's going to have a guest about this topic, and wow, they're going to devote a whole hour to this, and I just become fascinated about the things that come up. You make up your own mind listening to Focus. That's the reason you listen to Focus. Maybe you'll have a serious question the next half hour for Mike about some of these more serious issues with birds flying in the buildings in Chicago, or maybe you just happen to see a bird in your backyard that you're like, what is that? And, you know, just call it and describe it. But if Focus is something you feel like your mind expands every little bit every time you listen to the show, we'd love to hear from you and your pledge of support for Illinois Public Media and talk programming on WILL at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. You can, if you happen to be listening online anywhere, you can just point your browser to that and continue listening to the show.
Yeah, we hope that some of the issues, you know, some of the issues have to do with international affairs and what's happening in other countries. But we hope that at least some of the programs are about things that are going on in this community. In fact, in the first hour here, we were talking about biking around Champaign-Urbana and what things go into making a town a bike-friendly community. Well, that's a chance for you to air your own comments about life in the place where you live very directly. And we do have other kinds of things that we hope will touch you directly. We have, for example, every month we have a guy who does financial planning, and Dave Sinnoh. He was just here on Friday, so people could ask questions about their investment strategies. And we have a lot of physicians on the program, so people can ask questions about health. Or we talk about politics, and maybe that really gets you excited about being involved politically. I don't know how many life-changing experiences people have had listening to the show, but we hope that what it does is it makes your life a little better. Maybe it makes life in Champaign-Urbana a little bit better. I would certainly hope so. So if you would say, well, actually, yeah, I think that's true. I can point to some benefits from listening to the show and being able to call in. If that is true, and if you're not a supporter of the station, how about right now calling? and making a pledge. And it will really help us to, as we work toward this big goal that we're working on.
And I was handed a note a few minutes ago, 509 pledges to go in our effort to recruit more membership in this fall campaign.
About 24 hours at this point, and that's where we're heading. We're trying to get as many pledges from as many people as possible, and you can be the next one. You can go online to willpledge.org, or you can call 217-244-9455, and we thank you very much for your support. The guest this morning is Mike Ward. He is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences here at U of I. She's also a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey and has been here on the show a number of times to talk about birds and answer questions. And in fact, as Jeff said, one of the things that we could do is do a little bird identification. If there is something that you have seen, you're not quite sure what it is, if you can give us a description, give us the best description that you can.
I'm sure I can identify it.
I'm sure. Of course. See, of course you can. See, I saw this bird, and it was gray.
Yeah.
What was it?
No problem. Yeah. Okay. I can have an answer. That's no problem.
333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. If we talked earlier about this is migration time, and if you provide some habitat in your yard, so if there's some cover and there's some food, chances are you're going to see birds. So if you're thinking about putting out some food, some seed, is there a particular way to think about how to do it what to use, what's best to use?
Yeah, there's lots of different choices out there for seeds. What I do, and there's one issue is the squirrels. So you can either try to fight them or you can just give up. And I've given up. And so because of that, they're going to eat a certain amount of the seed. And so I usually just buy some of the mixed seeds, and hopefully the squirrels get some of the corn, some of the millet, and some of the sunflower, but there can be some left over as well. And so that's kind of what I've done lately, and it seems to work pretty well. That's the biggest issue people worry about, squirrels, and it's just your choice. You want to fight them. They're smart little critters. You can fight them, or you can just give up.
People claim that there are squirrel-proof feeders. I don't know.
I don't think there is. It might be squirrel-proof for a few days, but they're gonna catch on.
Yeah, they somehow find a way. They're pretty tough and they're pretty smart. We have a caller. It's somebody in Homer Lake. Let's do that. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm out at Homer Lake right now, and I'm looking at something I find a little hard to believe. I think I see a white pelican. Is that possible?
That is. In fact, someone had reported it out there a couple days ago. So. White pelicans it's definitely a white pelican. They're one of the birds that's really coming back well in Illinois. Homer Lake is a bit of an odd place to see a white pelican. They're much more common along the rivers, but I think you're probably correct.
Oh, wow, it's beautiful. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, very good. Thank you. Well, if you're out looking at a bird right now, and you say you want to call in and get an identification, you call us. Again, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So pelican, I wouldn't...
Yeah, they're really coming back. You know, I grew up in western Illinois over by Jacksonville, and when I was young, you know, I was interested in birds. There wasn't any around. And now there's literally tens of thousands along the river. But it is kind of unusual to see them this far to the east. But Homer Lake's a great place. And another good example around here, a place where you can go to. There's great trails. There's both forest and some lake. And right now I've been out there, and, you know, as birds are migrating down from the north, they're looking for some habitat. We don't have a lot of habitat here in east central Illinois. They see that, and they just beeline right there. And so, you know, I used to take my kids out there, and it's a great spot. And so, and it doesn't surprise me. Pelican's pretty rare, but there's actually been much rarer birds out there. White ibis, a bird that pretty much only occurs down in Florida, showed up there one day. There's been really rare ducks out there as well. So Homer Lake's a great place to go to see both the common and the rare stuff.
Okay. To Champagne for the next caller. Line number two. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Hi. I just want to make a comment about the squirrel feeder, the squirrels and the feeders.
Uh-huh.
There really are some squirrel-proof feeders. Wild Birds Unlimited, it's a small franchise. I believe there's still one here in town. They used to carry these long baffles. And you put your feeder on the top of a post with this long baffle over it. And as long as you don't put the feeder close enough that a squirrel can jump from a tree, or, you know, some other structure, I've had very good success with the squirrels not being able to get, on those at all. And it's They're a little bit expensive, but the money you save in feed and the less stress that's caused from not having to sit there and watch the squirrels eat all your food is well worth the cost. And the baffles are fairly long. They're probably, about 2 feet long. But I've had pretty close to 100% success with those.
That's good to hear because I probably have too many trees since I jump from it. But it's kind of fun to have the – I've used baffles before and put them just far enough so the squirrels can barely make it and see how acrobatic they are as they try to make the jump. But the if you have a big open area, I bet you can beat them.
Yeah. Well, I get maybe my feeders aren't tall enough because I've seen squirrels jump from the ground.
Right.
And manage to defeat – the idea of the baffle is they can't come up the pole.
Right.
But
but
somehow if they're good enough jumpers, it seems like they can actually –
get there.
They can get there. So,
well, the poles that you buy at the Wild Birds, I mean, these poles will put the top of the feeder at, somewhere close to 5.5-6 feet.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
Bottom of the feeder, sorry. But the top of the pole is around 5.5-6 feet. So I've been very pleased with mine. So just wanted to comment on that.
So it is possible. All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to a cell phone here, line one. And hello, in Champaign. Hello.
I was wondering if the guest has seen the birding movie, The Big Year, and if he'd like to comment on that. I'll listen offline.
Sure. I haven't, actually, but I've I read the book, and I'm familiar with some of the people in the book, and I've read the reviews. And so I hope to see it. I think it's great. So obviously it's a comedy. But I think it's good to promote. I mean, there's some crazy people out there that want to see a lot of birds, but it really shows the diversity of birds that are out there. And what I've heard from a lot of my friends that are bird people is that there's some technical issues, but it's not to be, it's not too surprising. But they do a good job of kind of illustrating the diversity of birds across North America. And, it's kind of – some of these people are a little – not little. They're very fanatic. And so it is a funny situation with these people. And so I would encourage – I haven't seen it, but I'm going to go see it with my family. And I would encourage people to go see it because I hear that it really does – there's some really remote areas that these people pay a lot of money to go, like an Attu in Alaska, Aleutian Islands, that they really do a good job kind of portraying the diversity you can see out there.
Well, and then so there are some people whose thing is they're keeping a list of all the birds they've seen in their life. So that's one thing. But there are people who have this thing. It's like a competition. How many different birds can you see in a year?
Oh, yeah. And that's even more than that. There's people that – how many birds can you see in Champaign County in a year? Or how many birds can you see in Champaign County in a day in October? So it really – it's really exploded in terms of – which it's good. I mean, I think some people take it to the extreme, but at least people start appreciating the diversity that's out there. And so I don't think that's a good thing.
Okay. To another cell phone call. This is someone in Kankakee and on our line four. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The second caller I was listening to said that she had a squirrel-proof feeder, and I do too, and they are a little bit expensive, and I'm not at home, so I can't tell you exactly what the name of it is, but it works, it works to the extent that the squirrels can't get to the food, but the birds are very, very helpful for the squirrels because they kick a lot of the seeds out of the container that it's in, and so the squirrels enjoy that advantage, but my daughter bought me a bird feeder last year for Christmas, and it's been just a wonderful addition to the house. I mean, because there's birds on it all the time,
That's cool.
And I hope more people try and do that, is feed the birds, because they're interesting to watch.
Yeah. In fact, there's a study right here on campus by a guy named, a grad student named Jason Fisher, who's looking at how many different birds use the bird feeders, and it's amazing. So you might go out and see a woodpecker, downy woodpecker, and a couple house finches in a given time. So maybe you think there's three or four of these birds using it. Turns out there might be two or three times as many. So a lot of birds are using these areas. And so it could actually be much more important for kind of local diversity than people used to give it credit for.
Definitely. Well, thank you for having
that. All right. Well, thanks for the call. I guess I didn't really think about that, but how often are you actually watching? So you may just by chance be passing by and you see the feeder and you see something there. But in a course of a day, no telling how many birds you would see if you could actually sit there and watch for the whole day.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people thought it was only a few individuals because there's a territoriality, there's a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. But Jason's preliminary research suggests that maybe there's a lot of birds using these areas. They're moving around from different feeders using a lot of different areas. And so he's using some new tagging technologies to go at this. And it looks like if that's true, it could be that some of these feeders are really important. And that's why, you know, if you could, I guess I understand if you could control the squirrels, cost savings would probably work it out because squirrels probably eat a lot of food. And if you could keep squirrels away, you have more food for the birds, and it might work out well.
And if they want to eat what's on the ground, okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's okay. To Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. A few weeks ago, I was in Meadowbrook Park on the East Trail. And on the far west side in a dead tree, there was a large bird, white, long legs, long neck, perhaps nearly the size of a blue heron. And I was wondering what that was.
So that was probably a great egret.
So
those, that's pretty unusual to see them around here, but they're moving through the area. They're one of these birds that declined immensely, you know, years ago. But as we've cleaned up the environment and cleaned up our rivers, they went from being an endangered species in Illinois to now they nest in Chicagoland areas along the Lake Michigan in thousands, and they'll nestle on the river. But in Meadowbrook, I would imagine it's a bird migrating. They all migrate south of the winter, migrating out of Chicago that, you know, just had to find something. So they'd go to a stream, pull out a few frogs, a few fish, but it's almost definitely a great egret.
Well, I think it was moving through because I hadn't seen it before or since.
Yeah.
And it was early morning, and it was finally flew off.
Yeah.
It was near the brook, which was pretty close to dry at the time, except for the beaver ponds.
Right. Yeah, they can – some of these – they can eat different stuff during migration, but it was probably looking for somewhere to eat before it took off its next leg of its voyage south. So
you think it was a great egret?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. One more caller at least, and Shanoa. Line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've enjoyed listening to your program this morning, and most of the time I only catch your program, unfortunately, while I'm harvesting, and which I'm doing right now. But recently I was at my other farm, and there was a large dark brown raptor flying around the stone quarry, and it seemed larger than our local goshawks. I'm wondering, would it have been a red-tailed hawk, or is there even the possibility of it being an eagle?
It was probably a red-tailed hawk, but eagles are starting to move, and so eagles are getting much more common. So if it was all dark underneath and above this time of year, it could have been a young eagle. Eagles are really doing well in Illinois. They're nesting kind of all throughout Illinois, and this time of year when the young one's starting to move, so... it could definitely be an eagle. I've seen eagles just walking, you know, driving into Champaign, walking across campus. They're definitely becoming more common. But look, if it's a lot of white underneath, it's probably a red tail. If it doesn't have a lot of white underneath, it could be a bald eagle, immature.
Yeah, it probably was a young eagle then because I didn't recognize any white underneath. It was at a distance, and it was flying around a stone quarry pond. And I know eagles eat a lot of fish.
They do, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you did I hear you correctly say that you had seen an eagle on the campus?
Oh, yeah, I've seen them flying over. I've actually seen both bald eagles and golden eagles flying over campus. Golden eagle only once. But bald eagles are getting, you know, just keep your eyes up. So I think a lot of times we're just, you know, walking across campus, looking down, looking around. But I'm always looking up, and there's a lot of stuff that flies over here that you might be surprised. I've seen, you know, large flocks of snow geese, all kinds of other raptors flying around. So bald eagles are not as uncommon as they used to be. So.
All right, Kankakee, let's talk with someone here. Line one, hello.
Hello, David. Hi. Another great program. Your guest had mentioned a new tagging technology. I'd be interested in hearing talk about it.
Sure. So tags are tricky with birds because you can't put GPS transmitters on birds because the batteries are too big. And so you got to go with something small. So what Jason is using is called RFID. So essentially the way that Walmart takes inventory and makes sure you're not stealing something, it has a little bitty tag on at the clothes. And so when you walk out the door, you hear the beep, beep, beep. Well, that's because this tag is getting energy from those big white things that you walk through as you go into Walmart or Kohl's or whatever store you want to go into. And so that's actually producing the energy that reflects off these tags. And so what Jason's doing is using these small little tags that put on all the birds, and the energy comes in the bird feeder. So under the bird feeder, he has a little battery and little antenna that actually provides the energy so he can tag these birds. The trade-off is you got to be close. So when you're walking out of Walmart, you know, within a foot of this of these receivers. And so he can do this at bird feeders because you know the bird's going to come to the bird feeder. We can't really do it if we want to look at how the great egret migrating south. We couldn't do that because we wouldn't have the receiver close enough. But for bird feeders, you know the bird's going to come there, so you can use this call. It's radio frequency ID, RFID. It's essentially the same technology Walmart has. So because Walmart's using it, it's super cheap. And so it makes it good for bird people because we don't have a lot of money to spend on tracking birds.
Where do you place it on the bird?
On the bands, on their legs.
On the legs.
Yep.
Okay. On the bands.
Yeah, right on the band he's doing it, on the leg. So it's a really small little tag.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I was just thinking, you know, earlier, earlier you were talking about putting transmitters on hummingbirds.
Yeah.
That's tricky. How do you teach? Yeah, I mean, how do you teach? It's such a tiny bird. They're so delicate. How do you teach someone even to how to hold onto the bird and then do this, do that?
Well, we have, you know, a lot of students are kind of out of undergrad, think about grad school, that get a lot of experience. So we hire some of these people, and they have a lot of experience. We teach them how to handle these hummingbirds. The hummingbirds are tricky because they're eating all the time. So you can't hold them very long. You don't want to stress them. We're using a 0.08 gram transmitter, so a very small transmitter. The problem with hummingbirds is they fly differently as well. So we had to think about the aerodynamics of the transmitter and the antenna. It becomes tricky, but we're getting, you know, technology, you know, here on campus, we have a lot of resources. And so we're using these resources in the engineering department to help us figure out new techniques to track these birds, because it's unlikely GPS technology is going to get small enough in the near future for us to be able to use it on hummingbirds for sure.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, we're just about the point we got to finish here. Again, just real quick around, this part of the state, good places to go.
Yeah, Homer Lake. Sounds like there's a pelican there right now. Homer Lake would be a great place to go. Forest Glen, Kennecuck Park over in Vermillion County, Heron Park, they're all right now, I know, have lots of birds. If you're a little more adventurous, going to the Illinois River Valley, Chautauqua National Wildlife Refuge by Havana. Like I said, there's probably 30,000 ducks over there. So those are some of the great areas to go. And online, there's lots of resources. There's a lot of bird watchers online. You can Google it, and you can find some great spots.
All right. Michael Ward, he is assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He's also a scientist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, which is based on the campus of the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.